Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Jan Agerfjordtoff and Jürgen Klinsmann will be here to reflect on what happened in Germany today. We start, though, in England. The big game, well, certainly on paper, was supposed to be Arsenal against Manchester United. In the end, though, it finishes as a goalless draw. Frank Leboeuf and Craig Burley with us to reflect on what happened in North London. Craig, fair?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you might say as the second half wore on, United had the better chances in the game. Certainly, Edison Cavani with a couple of very good chances. But it was sort of sporadic attacks, wasn't it? And I thought United actually had better control of the first half. But it was the quality was pretty poor. I mean, I honestly thought the highlight of the first half was a brilliant piece of defending from Martinelli when Pogba clipped that ball to Rashford. And the way he got himself back in there was fantastic. But, you know, it was a competition, Dan, at certain times in this game. And I don't know what Frank thinks, but it was a competition to see who could give the ball away the most. I thought Luke Shaw was the best outlet for United in the second half. But, you know, Arsenal come out and penned them back after half-time. And it just never really looked like scoring. Lacazette off the bar with a free kick. But when you think about what happened at the Etihad earlier in the day with the narrow win from Man City, that United knew the situation. They also knew that Arsenal without Tierney, Saka and Aubameyang. Now, two of those younger players have been the best players this season. And so there was an opportunity here for United to go and really get a stranglehold on Arsenal. And they allowed themselves to be penned back again. And I know United have been a big topic of discussion for us this week on the show, but I'm just once again flabbergasted by this tactic. Now, I know it's brought them a record amount of results on the road, but they're chasing Man City at the top now, and you've really got to stamp your authority on a side that were missing some key players. And once again, I think United failed to do that.
Craig used the word quality there, and I think it's a fair summation that it really was lacking in this tie, Frank.
Yeah, you're right, guys. That was really one word you can resume the game about. It's clumsiness. And Cavani in the second half was the perfect person to name about that, where he missed two big chances, especially the first one from a cross from the left side, where he was like 3 yards away from the net and put it just outside. And his volley, the second chance that he had, you know, was mostly a bad, let's say he was unlucky at that time, but he would have done, he should have done better. And Craig was right, you know, how many balls were given to the opponents, how many times easy passes were missed. A lack of quality overall. It was a big game in the 90s, it's definitely not in 2021. and the thing is, I think the boss club could be happy at the end of the game. Arsenal is happy to draw against the second of the league, just for confidence sake. And Manchester United is beating a record, you know, even beating Sir Alex Ferguson about not losing away from home for, I think, 18 months or something like that. So, no, it must be happy, some satisfaction at least from both club, even if we are not, you know, seeing a game we should be in a better quality.
I think it's 18 games, Frank, or something like that. But which is not, it's not to be, you know, it's not, you don't turn your nose up at that kind of form. But I just think it's not convincing from United. I'm certainly, and I've been crystal clear on this, I'm not convinced by the direction the team is going in, or in fact the stewardship it is getting. Because it's fits and starts, and particularly when there's opportunities out there. I mean, you look at Thomas Partey. Thomas Partey and Granit Xhaka actually did a very good job of negating Bruno Fernandes. Now, once again, he was, for the most part, pretty poor. But you didn't even have to pressure Thomas Partey today for him to give the ball away. He gave the ball away so many times. Now, that's telling me, as a coach on the sidelines, let's go and press this team, because they are going to try and play out from the back, Arsenal. They're going to try and get it into Xhaka and Partey. And Partey was having, in particular, was having a terrible game with the ball. But they allowed, at times, easy possession. And I just think at the end of the season, that's what they're going to look back on and say, well, we at times we were a little bit too soft in teams. And You know, Man City now have, what, a three-point advantage. And there's a long way to go, I understand that. But they have a game in hand. So on the run they're on at the moment, we surmise that they win that. That's 6 points plus a plus 14, Dan, goal difference. So it's effectively 7 points. It's at this time in the season when you really got to go and put a marker down, particularly when you've lost at home just a few days earlier to the team at the bottom of the league.
Meanwhile, what's changed at Arsenal, Craig? How's he managed to get this run going? Because like back in the day, obviously, at the turn of the year, we were talking about the possibility of Arteta getting sacked. But he's put together this good run and 0-0 draw against Manchester United. It is a point they retain.
Yeah, and they're keeping clean sheets. Yeah. I mean, holding's been a big bonus for them because he's not the, he's not a Frank Leboeuf-esque centre-half that will come out and play a long ball over the top. But he's a decent defender and he's getting better and he's getting game time. The fullbacks have improved and, you know, Cedric's come in and done a good job. But we know Tierney has been excellent. We know Saka's been excellent. Those players were missing today, but they've been part of the resurgence, as has Smith Rowe. And there's just been more energy and more organisation about Arsenal. They've had a bit of stomach about them. They've been a little bit, they've been a lot harder to beat and to play against because there was a period where they were actually quite easy to play against. So things are turning slightly for them. There's a heck of a long way to go before they're even in the mix with all the big boys. But at least he staved off the pressure short term. And when these guys came back into the team, and his goalkeeper's playing well as well, who had to make a couple of very good saves. So things are looking better for Arsenal, but you have to look at it from the Man United perspective. They're the side that are in the title race at the moment.
Yeah.
They were the side that had to make a statement after the loss, and they were also playing against a weakened Arsenal team. And I think there'll be a lot of United fans quite disappointed looking at their approach to this game.
You take a look at the table, and as Craig mentioned, City 3 points clear at the top with a game in hand, Frank. We saw them lose against Sheffield United, obviously the draw today. Was this the week that Manchester United's title challenge ended?
It would be, but I think, well, if you know football enough and if you're not only a fan of Manchester United, you can clearly see that there is such a difference between Manchester City and Manchester United. And with all due respect to the players who belong to Manchester United, that's clear. And again, today, the way they play football, the way they understand football, the way they move around the field shows you that Manchester City is much more above technically, tactically, and maybe physically, maybe not, but I will give that to Manchester United, than Manchester United. That's for me clear. There is no doubt that City is better than Manchester United. And I know some fan of Manchester United would be mad at me, but that's the reality of it. And it's clear that, except if maybe Liverpool comes back, City will end up maybe being the championship leader, or sorry, the Premier League leader, 15 points ahead of everybody.
Wow. Yeah.
City. Now, there's two. The thing is, just quickly, Dan, the thing is with City, without De Bruyne and Aguero, they still have a lot of other strings to their bow. I mean, there was no Cancelo today. Mm-hmm. Either. It wasn't a great performance, that's for sure. And it could have been one of those games like West Brom where they threw a 1-0 goal lead away. It had that danger about them. Fleck had a shot at the end that just went wide. So they can't get blasé about it. But you have two big games tomorrow and Liverpool going to West Ham and Leicester playing Leeds. These are all huge games now, but I think the one thing with United is that they've almost rested on their laurels and been too reliant on Marcus Rashford and Bruno Fernandes. And when those two guys don't perform at the level that they have been, and Rashford's been off colour recently, Fernandes is in a poor couple of games, then United have to look around at others to step up to the plate. And there's not been a lot of people putting their hands up in moments of need.
Craig, you look at the...
Yeah, but Craig, you can see the two games Manchester United and Manchester City played against Sheffield United, the same opponent, where Manchester United really struggled against Sheffield United, and we wonder who was first and who was last in the table at the game when they played against Sheffield United. When you see Manchester City, they did what they had to do. They scored one goal, game over. You don't really see how Sheffield United can come back into the game. That's the thing, and that's, I think, the difference between Manchester United and City.
You mentioned, Craig, a number of changes that City made today just to demonstrate the strength in depth. No Kevin De Bruyne injured. We talked about Kun Aguero a lot already this season. Where could they lose it?
And they could lose it in a sense that what almost happened today. And I agree with Frank. I mean, they were in total control. But what Chris Wilder did at the end, he said, well, look, the likelihood is of us going down in goal difference this season is slim to nothing. So I might as well throw some more front men on, lump the ball forward, and then get on the second balls. And in some sense, that's the big danger for City, I think, in terms of their title challenge, is that they dominate teams and they don't kill them off like today. And then the ball drops like it did to John Fleck with 5 minutes to go, and it whistled past Ederson's left-hand post. That's the danger, and I suppose that is the danger in leaving some players out and not having Aguero either. But I think it's safe to assume that no matter who Man City play domestically this season, maybe Liverpool apart, that they're going to dominate almost every side. The question comes down to, and we know they've got a very good defensive this year, the question comes down to, are they going to kill teams off? If they start doing that, I don't even think Liverpool will catch them.
Gentlemen, as always.
You know, Dan, there is a big question about Guardiola lineup. You know, that statistically, every time that he every time Mahrez scored a goal, which is I think 6 times in the Premier League, the game after it, he was on the bench. So psychologically, you know, you have to work with all those this big squad, you know, and make sure that everybody understands how Guardiola thinks in his head, and it's not because you're on the bench that you're not as good as somebody who's on the field. That's the thing with Guardiola, and if everybody sticks to his ideas, it's going to work. But if suddenly something doesn't work, maybe, you know, the system can change and they can start losing games.
Boys, thank you very much. More from Frank and Craig over on Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Let's head to the Bundesliga, where once again it was a 4-1 scoreline between Bayern Munich and Hoffenheim, but this time it was the defending champions who would take all 3 points, somewhat of a revenge to what we saw happen in September of last year, as we welcome in Jürgen Klinsmann and Jana Agafjortov. Jürgen, Bayern are just a machine, and I feel like we say it every single week, but that was epitomised once again today.
Yeah, I mean, even if Hoffenheim had a good start into the game, actually, it was only Bayern Munich then demonstrating clearly that they are the only one team to win the title this season again. Very, very professional performance, obviously. The usual goal scorers with Müller, with Lewandowski, Gnabry got his goal as well. So a very professional performance, really.
There's not much more to say, is it, Jan? From a neutral's point of view, disappointing, obviously, that Bayern Munich are going to go and win the title once again. And it's interesting, like just a few weeks ago, we were thinking, you know, we could have a title race here. That has been now thrown right in the bin.
You know, Bayern Munich, they are teasers because they have, they just give the opposition some small hints. Maybe we'll lose one or two games. But today, I mean, we have to look for the small things. When Kramaric made that 2-1, Baumgartner had some good chances just after halftime. But then all the small details, Thomas Müller scoring a typical Thomas Müller goal. The ball was like bumping like two or three times before it went into the goal. And then Lewandowski, that was his 24th goal in the Bundesliga. He's going for the Gerd Müller record. And just these small things when he just wait for the rebound, wait a half a second and then he scores. It's art to look at Lewandowski scoring goals.
Now obviously Lewandowski as a goal scorer will grab the headlines, Jürgen, but every time I see Joshua Kimmich play, he just re-emphasizes how important he is to this team's success.
Absolutely. No, Joshua Kimmich is really vital for this Bayern Munich side. And it's not by coincidence that when he was missing for these couple of weeks, you know, that they struggled a little bit. Now he's back. He's kind of really the chief in midfield. You know, he delivers the balls. He distributes everywhere. You know, he keeps everybody on board. You know, his energy is all over the field. And this is making a big difference. Now you can see that Bayern Munich slowly gets back into the rhythm. And there's nobody then in Germany that can stop them.
Of all the nonsense you normally tweet, Jan, something did stand out as quite interesting about Upamecano and his future and how Bayern Munich are kind of breaking their own rules with this deal.
Yeah, they do. First, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge said, obviously, we want this defender. He's a clause of 42 million euro in the summer. And then today, Salihamidžić said, yeah, we met with the agents yesterday. So Bayern likes to do things secretly in some areas, and suddenly they have just bought some good players. I suspect them having a weak card here, because they are always like talking about this Upamecano. And from the Leipzig camp, we have learned that maybe he would prefer to go to England and go to English football. So it's a funny strategy now when Bayern is talking a lot in the transfer market. Let's see how things works.
How would you think he would fit in at Bayern, Jürgen? Not bad, I imagine.
No, Upamecano obviously is an outstanding center back. There's no doubt about it, and he's highly regarded. If it's in Italy, down in Spain, even they talk about him, or Premier League. But what Bayern Munich is doing, that's what they're doing since 40 years. You know, when their main rival comes out with an exceptional player, then they throw these speculations on it, especially, you know, when they get a little bit closer to them. And that gets in the head of the players. It gets in the head of their rivals. And that's what they usually do with the best Dortmund player or the best player, in this case now, from the main following team, which is RB Leipzig at the moment. So it's not by accident that they throw out these kind of things right when they're in the battle with them.
Meanwhile, Borussia, go on, Jan.
No, I'm just saying that is a fair point. And over the history of Bayern, when you look at Bayern, the way not only do they put like things in the head of the players, they always pick them up, being Dortmund, being Werder Bremen, being whatever a club. I'm just saying, in terms of getting this player in the summer, I'm not so sure that they are as sure as they want to pretend.
Elsewhere, Leipzig took all 3 points, beating Bayer Leverkusen by 1-0. Archie Rintoul spoke to Tyler Adams after the game.
Tyler Adams, how good does that win feel today?
Yeah, it feels amazing. Like I said, disappointing result last week, and so we had to really focus on this match today to, again, continue to move in the right direction, continue to develop as the club and the ambitions that we have, and to stay towards the top of the table is very important for us. So those 3 points are important, but like I said, now we have a cup game on Wednesday, another important game the following weekend, so we need to continue to pick up points and move forward in the competitions that we want to stay in.
What has the coach said to the team after the game today?
Yeah, he was very happy with our performance. And again, it was just a step in the right direction. He said before the game how important this game was going to be for us. And we have to have the mentality that we only come away with the win. So he was happy with us.
It is the Super Bowl coming up. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait to watch the game. Obviously, American football is something that I follow. My brother plays American football. So I'm definitely excited to see that matchup. And I'm rooting for the Chiefs. So we'll see what happens.
And Mahomes against Brady?
Yeah, a good matchup. You know, Brady's the GOAT, but Mahomes is kind of the up-and-coming superstar, so it's another exciting matchup.
Who's the GOAT of RB Leipzig?
The GOAT of RB Leipzig? I don't know. Hopefully one day me.
So a little bit of breathing room now between Leipzig and the chasing pack. Leipzig 5 points clear of Eintracht Frankfurt, who moved up to third. Jürgen, Leipzig the best of the rest?
Yeah, I said that actually from the beginning on. I said if there's one team maybe being able to challenge Bayern Munich, it's RB Leipzig. But now, obviously, you know, the difference is 7 points already, and we're just getting into February. So it will be very, very difficult, because when Bayern then gets on a roll and when they take their rhythm also with Champions League games again, then I see them actually by March, April already being almost lifting the trophy. But Leipzig is, I know, throughout the last couple of years, the only team really that can keep up the rhythm with them, challenging them, but maybe not mature enough yet, and maybe not nasty enough yet to really be a serious, serious rival.
But they got the win today, Jan, kind of just proving the point to over the 90 minutes.
They did, but having said that, 2 minutes before the end, Schick had an unbelievable chance to take that game. But it was a hard-fought game for RB Leipzig, that, to get against a rival. And if you have a look at the table now, it was very important for them. We have four teams now on 32 points, and my Eintracht Frankfurt on 33. But as you're saying, RB Leipzig up there, Julian Nagelsmann, I mean, he is a wanted coach all around the world at the moment. And I think it's good that RB Leipzig, they are working very well at that club. They're recruiting of young, talented, quick players. So I like that is a club that is easy to like that part of it. And then we don't take the whole discussion about the 51 rule. That we can do another night.
Yeah, I don't think we've quite got time. There's a lot going on today. Yeah, we've got time to go down that road. Meanwhile, Jürgen, Borussia Dortmund. Of course, such a roller coaster season for them already. Coming from behind, though, to get that 3-1 win against Augsburg.
Yeah, but a well-deserved 3-1 win. They could have scored a couple of more goals. I think they controlled the entire game, so it was good to see them back getting 3 points. Obviously, you know, the little funny moment was when Haaland, you know, hit the crossbar with his penalty. Yep. You know, they continue a little bit unfortunate road down with penalties. But Jadon Sancho was back on the score sheet. It was a decent performance by Dortmund. It should give them a little bit of more confidence now, calming things a little bit down, because obviously Dortmund is a very emotional place. You know, everything, every little piece that happens there is highly kind of discussed by the fans and by everyone. But these 3 points help them a little bit to settle for the moment. And then there's everybody is involved in the Champions League race then.
What happened to your boy in that penalty, Jan?
Well, at least he got a penalty now. I mean, why should Royce or Sancho do that? He always be the goal getter, should get that.
Wait, he missed it, yeah. He should never take a penalty again. That's it. Done. Had your chance.
He will take it again. He will never miss again. But I think it's a fair point for Jürgen, because in Dortmund, everybody are talking about this club developing young players, but they need to be top four. They need to do better than they've done before. But the good news for them in 2021, and I'm talking about January 2021, all the games this season, Jadon Sancho has been brilliant. And he was brilliant again today. A great goal. His first touch on that goal and his finishing was excellent. So that is good news for Dortmund. They need him, because they've had problem to kind of battle down teams like Augsburg, who don't give them a lot of the space behind the back four. So it was an important win for them today.
I wanted to bring that goal up with you, Jürgen. How good was that first touch?
No, it shows his class. It shows his technical capabilities. You know, it's so he's so... so fine with the ball, and so the first touch goes right away exactly where, you know, to prepare then his goal. And these are the little things that you as a coach, you're watching, you want to see, you know, how effective they are when they're under pressure, when they're in full speed. How is the control of the ball when you are in full speed? And that's what he's doing that just outstanding, and that's why he's regarded as one of the big prospects, you know, for the upcoming years.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. A lot more reflection on what happened in the Bundesliga, plus all those other leagues in Europe as well. Be sure to go over to our YouTube channel. Back to the Bundesliga. It was Hoppe versus Sargent in the battle of the US strikers. None would find the back of the net in the game between Schalke and Werder Bremen. 7 minutes before the break, Mascarell with the goal to make it 1-0 Schalke. Then with 13 minutes to go, Kevin Moore will get the equaliser. Nice build-up play here from Rashica. It would finish Werder Bremen 1, Schalke 1. The action continues tomorrow. Köln taking on Bielefeld, that's at 9:30, followed by Wolfsburg against Freiburg.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Real Madrid's rubbish January continued, beaten at home 2-1 by Levante. Militao sent off early in the game. Courtois saved a penalty, but in the end, not enough, as the visitors would take all 3 points. Ali Moreno joins us. Just not good enough yet again for Real Madrid, Ali.
No, it wasn't. And the red card, obviously, a big moment in the game. But I want to go deeper into the analysis of what Real Madrid is and the reality of what this team has become. For months, you and I have been talking about the fact that this version of Real Madrid is underwhelming. At full strength, they're still underwhelming. And when you're missing players like Sergio Ramos, Lucas Vázquez, Dani Carvajal, Federico Valverde, Nacho, so on and so forth, whether it's injuries or COVID, then you look at what was available today for Zidane or Bentoni, his assistant, who's in charge because obviously Zidane tested positive for COVID, and you think to yourself, well, there isn't much to pick here. There isn't much to get excited about this team. And so then you think, all right, well, they should be enough because it's Real Madrid. Well, that's part of the issue. It's not, you're not going to win games just because you're Real Madrid. Mm. You still have to defend well. And so a ball over the top, 40 yards in the air, and neither Varane nor Militao are able to deal with it properly. And eventually Militao takes down Sergio Leon. And now we have ourselves a red card situation. And so that lack of depth that I just spoke of and how underwhelming this team is, that's when it comes into play. Because now you look at the bench and you say, well, who's going to play center back for us? Who's going to drop into that position? Because Militao is off the field. We still got a game to play here. It's still 1-1. And now we have to figure out, okay, how do we get a result out of this? And then you look at the bench and it's Victor Chus. Who? Yeah, Victor Chus. Diego Altuve. What? Who's that guy? Sergio Rivas. Who? What? You're not going to win games playing against decent teams with a man down when that's what you have available. And then the guys that are on the field have their own niches and have their own difficulties. So overall for Real Madrid, they lose this game, but it's a continuation of what we've already been seeing. They're underwhelming. They're inconsistent. They make mistakes defensively. Eventually, you get thrown out of the game, and now you're chasing. And when you're chasing, you're going to run into trouble. And Levante was good enough on the day to beat Real Madrid.
Out of the Spanish Super Cup, out of the Copa del Rey, out of La Liga. They're not going to win anything, are they, this season, Ali? It's done.
No, they're not, unless you really like them for Champions League.
Yeah, good luck with that.
No. Yeah, exactly. Good luck with that. No, they're not. And you really look today as well as okay, so the red card happens. Now Casemiro drops into a central defender position. That takes him out of the midfield, which was an area of strength for Real Madrid. When they're at their best, that area of the field is their strength. It's Casemiro, it's Toni Kroos, it's Luka Modric. Well, that didn't have that quite a amount of strength that you would want, because now Casemiro's out of there. And now he's playing out of position. So the game-tying goal, because you were up 1-0, the game-tying goal by Morales comes by Casemiro, going to chase a ball out of position, okay? Because it's what he does naturally. As a central midfielder, he goes and chases into that space. He gets himself out of position. Now Varane is out of position. Odriozola is out of position. The ball goes over the top of everybody, and Morales with a great finish. And that's just a little example of what Real Madrid is. And so when we project into the future and say, okay, what are they going to win this year? Well, yes, the answer is zero. Because even at their best, even with everybody available, there's not much in this team to get excited about. And if you're looking for Hazard to be that guy, he had a good weekend last weekend. Not quite the same this weekend. Well, difficult to ask something from Hazard because, well, they were playing with 10 men. But even then, you just don't see where things are going to change for Real Madrid. Is Vinicius coming off the bench? not based on today's evidence when he comes in and gives away a penalty. Rather than changing what they do offensively, he actually changed what they did defensively. And he didn't do it in a good way. Too many holes in this team, too many inconsistency, nothing to get excited about.
Ali Moreno, as always, thank you very much. So Atleti with a chance to stretch their lead to 10 points at the top of the table. They're in action away against Cadiz on Sunday. Meanwhile, Sevilla with a win today, moving them up to third. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Plenty of action in Italy today. AC Milan winning, Inter Milan winning, Juventus winning as well, moving them up to third in the table. Stuart Robson joins us. Let's go chronologically, shall we? Because I woke up with you on ESPN Plus calling the AC Milan game. And what's interesting about Milan this season, Robbo, is that when it comes to matches they should win, they do. And they did it, of course, again today after that knockout in the Cup midweek.
Well, they had that poor performance against Atalanta. They had the defeat against Inter in midweek. So you thought they'd be under a bit of pressure today. But I thought they played well enough again. Kessie was running midfield. Romagnoli coming back into the side, organised the defence. Tomori coming from Chelsea played quite well on loan. And really, they deserved to win. There was only the last 10 minutes where they were under a little bit of pressure. But for most of the game, they dominated. They dominated possession. Ibrahimovic led the line well. The youngsters playing in behind him. Rebic obviously scored from the rebound from the penalty. But they were the better team. They dominated possession and they created more chances. And when they did have to make saves, Donnarumma was there to make them.
The point that you're making during the commentary, Rob, I thought was interesting, is that hold-up play from Zlatan is key.
Absolutely, because sometimes he leads the line and tries to make runs in behind. We've seen him do that. But on this occasion, he often came short and it was other players that run beyond him. They had Liao who could run beyond him. They had Rebic who could run beyond him down the other side. Salamakers down the right-hand side. He didn't really perform particularly well, but those three players were making runs beyond him and Ibrahimovic was holding up the play. And then when he needs to, when the crosses come into the box, he's always a threat. He's going to win balls in the air and he's still got strength. He's still got a little bit of pace to hold off challenges. And I thought he led the line well again.
Meanwhile, as I mentioned, Juventus up to third after a win for them. What was really interesting, I thought, about this game, Robbo, is that in the first half, just flashes of brilliance from Juve. The opening goal, I thought, was a superb team goal. The second half, they just seemed to lose all of their rhythm.
Exactly what I was going to say. In the first half, I thought, at last, the penny's dropped for Pirlo and the players. We've got to play at a high tempo. We've got to pass it forward. Morata and Ronaldo made run after run after run in behind. Chiesa was coming off the left-hand side. The midfield players were making forwards. And the midfield players, Bentancur played as well as I've seen him play, hitting those big diagonals out to the left-hand side. You saw Arthur playing as well as I've seen him play for Juventus. He was getting on the ball, he was making things happen, and they were passing it forward. And they looked a top-class side. I thought, this is the Juventus that's going to go on and win the league. And in the second half, they did what they've been doing all season, started to pass backwards, started to take too many touches on the ball, not looking forward enough. Ronaldo didn't make any more forward runs. Morata started coming back towards the ball, and they then started to cause themselves problems. It allowed Sampdoria back into the game. Yes, they got the second through Ramsey, but the first half, if they play like that, they will win Serie A. If they play like they did in the second half, they won't.
So the obvious question is, how do you make sure they play like first half Juventus and not second half Juve?
Well, that's the question. Who's given them the instructions? Is it Pirlo that's given them instructions? Play this way. I want you to play fast, flowing football. I want you to get it forward. I want you to make runs in behind. Or is it the players doing that in the first half, playing with a high tempo, and then retreating back into their shell and trying to play tippy-tappy football and not playing forward enough? Who's dictating what goes on, the players or Pirlo?
It's fun to see Chiesa grow, isn't it? Almost match by match now.
Yeah, it was a good run for the goal. I mean, good link-up play between the front two. Chiesa coming off the left-hand side. He can play on the right-hand side. He's got that little bit of pace to run with the ball. He's got a bit of trickery as well. He can go past people. He's still got to find that final pass. If he can find the final cross, the final pass, he's going to be an outstanding player. He's still got a bit to do at the moment.
Meanwhile, the most convincing of wins went to Inter, beating Benevento by 4-0. The scoreline maybe flatters Inter a bit. They're always in control of this one, Robbo, but maybe not a 4-0 control.
No, they didn't have to play at a particularly high tempo. I was disappointed in their display up until the last 15, 20 minutes. I was disappointed in the front, so I know Lukaku scored two goals and Martinez got his goal as well, but they're key to everything that Inter do because they love to get the ball into them. And last season, at the beginning of this season, when they're playing really well, they link with each other. That hasn't been the case. I was disappointed with Lukaku. I thought his work rate, his ability to hold it up, was back to what it was at Manchester United. He needs to get back on form if they're going to win the league, and he also needs Martinez to come up with the goods as well. I was impressed with Perisic. He did quite well at left wing back. That's a decision that Antonio Conte's got to make at times. Ashley Young or Perisic down that left-hand side. And Hakimi, once again, final pass, final ball. For all his good work, hasn't been good enough.
Lukaku got two goals, Robbo. A bit harsh.
Yes, as I was saying, he scored two goals late on. The first one, the goalkeeper's mistake, passed it straight to Martinez and it fell to Lukaku. And the other one, he was free in the penalty area with a pass from Sanchez. But his general play up until that point wasn't good enough. And I'm talking about not for this game, I'm talking about for winning Serie A. For Antonio Conte to lift the title with this Inter side, they need Lukaku and Martinez at their best as a combination.
Christian Eriksen started as well, Robbo. His reward for that free kick.
Yeah, he played as the holding midfield player instead of Brozovic. He was good, actually, with the ball. He kept on switching the play. He made good decisions. Did as well as Brozovic would do. He also delivered some set plays, some excellent set plays. There's certainly, again, Antonio Conte will have a decision to make. I think Brozovic will come back into the side, but certainly Eriksen's given him food for thought because he did play that role really well against a weak side, it has to be said, because if you're pressurised defensively, who's going to be better, Brozovic or Eriksen? I'm not quite sure.
What's your game tomorrow then, Robbo?
Oh, I haven't got a game tomorrow. I've got a day off tomorrow, which is very nice.
What a lovely moment. Disappointing, though, obviously, for us, the viewers. Stuart Robson, thank you very much. Plenty of action on ESPN+. It all kicks off, especially against Udinese. That's the early game at 6:30 a.m. Then on ESPN2, it's Atalanta, Lazio. What a match that should be. And then Napoli take on Parma at 12. And then be sure to join us for the feature game, Roma against Hellas Verona. That kickoff is at 2:45. Coverage, though, starts with me and Shaka in the studio. I think Jurgen, Gab, Matteo with us as well at 2 p.m. Extraordinary scenes in France today as the game between Marseille and Rennes was postponed. This is after, you can see here, the fans storming Marseille's training ground hours before the protest. Frank Leboeuf is back with us. Frank, just explain what led to this.
Well, mainly the results of Marseille lately, where they lost a couple of games lately. They were, a month ago, fighting for the title, and it seems to be just a fantasy right now. So the fans are not happy, and they just came to the training ground to show to the chairman, the owner, who is an American person, Frank McCourt, and the players, that they were unhappy with the situation. And that's what it is, and it's what we see in the Ligue 1. It's completely appalling, shameful, and you just go there and destroy everything and threat all the players and scare them up in a way, which, in fact, is not... when you're a supporter, a way to do when you think and you hope that the club's going to go better. That's my main problem with mostly Latin countries like my country. In France, I was born in Marseille. I was the captain of Marseille for 2 years, for the last 2 years of my professional life. And I went through that, you know, with threatenings all the time, you know, where we were losing games, you know. I remember one player leaving the Stade Vélodrome on the truck, on the back of his car, you know, hidden because he didn't want to play the supporters to see him, the fans to see him. I mean, it's been a nightmare. The problem is it's not only Marseille. This afternoon, Saint-Etienne fans, they came to the training ground as well to show to the players and the chairman they weren't happy. It happens to Nîmes, to Bordeaux, to Nantes a month ago. And that's what it is with fans who think that the club belongs to them. They really think that they own the club and that they're more important than the players, the institution and everything. The problem is the police knew that some fans would come, and they were like 300 or 400 people coming to the training ground, and nothing moved before it happened. And so they came after all the damages that they created, and at the end of the day, they arrested 25 people. The thing is, they have to play midweek. They have to play against Paris Saint-Germain at the end of the week, which is the Clásico, as we call us. And it's going to be a big problem because some players have been so scared about what happened that I think they're going to leave. It happens in December 99 with the same kind of thing where they broke the doors, they burned some cars, players and everything. And Christophe Dugarry, 2 weeks after, left the club. Robert Pires left the club to Arsenal 6 months after. And at the end of the day, they're killing the club. Because now players want to come to Marseille. And if Frank McCourt, the American owner of Marseille, wants to leave, nobody wants to buy the club. So that's the result of those riots. That's the result of what fans think what they have to do to make a club better. They kill the club.
Frank Leboeuf, thank you very much for that insight. Just a reminder how things stand in the table with regards to what's going on the pitch. Lyon, 1 point clear at the top of the table with PSG and Lille, who are both on 45 points apiece.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Frank and Craig answering your questions on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. As always, thank you very much for your tweets. Manchester United didn't win, so Craig Burley is with us. Frank Leboeuf also with us to answer your questions. Craig, people are obsessed about you and Manchester United. Craig, how much of Man United's underperformance against the big six sides can be attributed to the manager? Of course, they failed to beat any of the big six.
But a lot of 0-0 draws.
Yeah. Why? Why have they been a lot of 0-0 draws?
I don't know. It's hard to... I mean, I don't know. It's...
Have you got nickels each? People are... What's wrong with you?
People are infatuated with this, and I don't know why. It's... My analysis is not... You know, people can tweet in, and colleagues of mine can come on and argue with me. All they want. My analysis of this scenario at United and the management is the same as it was before the season, and it is the same as when they were top of the league, and it's not changed. I don't analyse United or their manager on a weekly basis and change my mind. So, you know, we'll see what happens at the end of the season. But yeah, that could cost them, but they have been beating sides. They have been beating the lesser sides, which maybe was an issue for them in the past, but you know, people have to differentiate between the two A's, agenda and analysis. And my analysis, as you know, has been steadfast on this Man United team.
Frank, do you have a theory as to why we're seeing so many 0-0 draws in these big games?
We all say that season, you know, it's not the those kind of game who are going to distribute the trophies. And it's mostly, you know, the game you're going to play against the smaller teams, because I think the level dropped. You know, last year, City and Liverpool were like 30 points ahead of everybody else, and there was no discussion. I think this season, the number one in the league was 9 times different. So it may be a reason why, you know, everybody, it's a big fight right now. It's because the level drop, everybody's at the same level, let's say, which is not a big standard. And so, therefore, you have many 0-0. And when you have some clumsiness that we saw today between Arsenal and Manchester United, when you miss the net from 3 yards away, don't expect to have anything else but a 0-0.
Yeah, Craig, similar question here. Why do big games mostly fail to live up to their billing at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, there's been the odd exception, but I wonder whether that's partly down to the atmosphere as well. You know, I think I've read people talking about atmosphere. I've read people talking about tiredness or exhaustion or whatever. But then we had Bruno Fernandes, you know, a week or so ago when he was left out the FA Cup tie, not for form reasons, but more for rest reasons. You know, basically slamming his manager in some sense and saying, listen, I'm 26 years old. I'm not tired. And I'm ready to go. So there's an argument both ways. But yeah, I think some of them have been a little overcautious. In some sense as well. And others have just, as Frank said, the standard has just not been there, particularly with some of the teams like City and Liverpool, where they were unbelievably good for a three-year period and they've taken a drop this year. So a little bit of everything, I would say.
Frank, who will finish higher? Arsenal, Spurs or Chelsea?
Wow. Well, Chelsea, I want to know what's going on with, what's going to happen with Tuchel, you know, and I couldn't be, after the game, the fantastic game they played when they drew, I think, yeah, they drew the last game.
The Wolves
I couldn't
game.
Be for technical issues, but I was very mad of the players, you know, and the way they played. So I don't see any involvement, you know, in a very short term. So hopefully for the Blues, it's going to be better with Tuchel, you know, ability of changing the mood of the players and the way they're going to play. Arsenal are getting better, so it's possible. And Tottenham are in a phase right now where now we all know that they're not going to win the title. But with the way they play, you know, they can still surprise and disturb many, many teams. So I would say right now, Spurs.
Yeah.
I didn't see them falling like Chelsea and Arsenal, but I would say Spurs.
I think really Chelsea have to finish higher, and I think it's a must for Thomas Tuchel, and for various reasons. But one is experience, two the expectations, but the other reasons would be one, they have a much better squad than the other two teams. Secondly, you know, Tottenham have been heavily reliant on Son and Kane, and Kane's out injured, as we know, so that's a huge problem. And for those reasons, and from where Arsenal were under Arteta, you know, Chelsea, if they finish behind those two teams, really need to have a damn good look at themselves. So I would say, unless Kane can make some miraculous recovery, which I can't see, I would say Chelsea have to finish higher than those two.
Frank, if you were Ed Woodward and could only make one signing this January, who would you sign?
I'm sorry, but who is Ed Woodward?
He is the CEO of Manchester United.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's,
you know,
all right.
You would have talked to me about Bruce Buck, you know, from Chelsea. I would have known. I would have known him. But Ed Woodward, I'm sorry, I don't. Wow.
I could tell you.
Go on, Craig.
I tell you, Craig. I would go out on a limb here and say, if they signed this player, I would change my mind about them winning the league this year. And it's not Messi, because that's just ridiculous. It would be Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
If you said to me Erling Haaland was going to play every game for United between now and the end of the season, then Bruno Fernandes could have a bad day. Marcus Rashford could have a bad day. But this guy could carry... In fact, I think they should go and sign him. I think they should break the bank for this guy in the summer. Somebody should, because you're probably going to get a decade of goals galore, and he, for me, would make the big difference.
Would you go Haaland over Mbappe?
Yeah, okay, Craig. Yeah, but come on.
Craig,
come on, nobody.
Haaland,
sorry, Haaland and Mbappe will never go to Manchester United. Can we agree on that?
I'm not
really
getting involved in that one.
Okay.
Erling Haaland, United have the clout. I don't think Mbappe will go there. I think Mbappe will go to Spain if the two richest clubs in Spain can get their finances in order, which is a big doubt, particularly Barcelona. But, you know, whether Haaland goes to Spain or Italy or not, I don't know. But certainly United have the clout, financial clout, to bring him in. And listen, if he signed before the end of the week, and this is all, we know this is not going to happen, by the way, but to go to the question, if he was playing for United between now and the end of the season, I would possibly change my mind, because he is that good.
And would that then make Solskjaer a great coach?
Not going down that line today. I tell you what, it would make him a bloody lucky coach to get him.
Frank, can Chelsea succeed with a back three under Tuchel? Rumour is that they will do the same tomorrow against Burnley.
Well, you know, the last game they played, you know, defensively, I think everybody was really concerned, and they had a very good game. And I found everybody spot on defensively. It's offensively that we have Chelsea has a problem, and where they mostly don't do anything. But the back three is possible, yeah? They have the players fast enough and mature enough. When I think about Rüdiger, Thiago Silva, and Zuma, it's possible. Especially if you put Reece James on the right side and Chilwell on the left side, we'll have less, defensive concerns. Yeah, it's really possible. Yeah, and it's maybe a good idea.
Frank, I haven't spoken to you since... Go on, Craig.
Go on.
I was just going to ask, Frank, I haven't spoken to you since the Wolves game. How was your blood pressure as Jorginho just kept passing it sideways?
My God, no! I was very sad to not being able to talk about Chelsea after the game because, I mean, I follow what I saw.
Were you in Luxembourg on... again?
It's in Luxembourg.
No, I wasn't.
Brown envelope.
No, really. Jorginho and Kovacic. I want to understand if they only work about statistics or they think about, you know, winning a game. That's the thing that I'm wondering. You know, when you make so many passes just to get the ball back, then to put the ball on the left or on the side or backwards, you know, is that the way you want to see football? You know, they never try to gain at least 5 yards with the ball when they have the space. Make a ball, give a ball, interesting ball forward for one of their teammates, but a free teammate were not obliged to give them the ball back. You know, I don't know what the kind of football they understand. I got crazy the last game where I saw Leicester playing and I said, wow, Ndidi, he understands football, the football that I love. You know, he likes to go forward, he likes to take risks, he likes to give the ball forward to his teammates, but in a good condition, not to just to get the ball back. I mean, something has to change. Something has to change there because he was so slow, so useless. So everybody was happy. 820 passes, completed passes for Chelsea. For what? Nil, nil. For one shot. For one good shot. Well done, guys. Keep on doing that. I never thought that football was about passes ball. I thought it was about scoring goals, but whatever.
In some sense, did you see we actually talked about it in the show yesterday, had the players training. Did you see that, Dan?
With the smaller balls, yeah?
Yeah, which is like, I'm not going to ridicule that because that's the technique he wants. As I said in the show yesterday, he can have the players, you know, training with a jam sponge for all I care. It's going to come down to results. But in some sense, because of the opposition again tomorrow, Burnley, and how they'll approach it, he's already under some early managerial scrutiny. Although he's only in the door less than a week. Huh? Somebody say something.
No, go on.
Oh, bad connection again. He's under some early scrutiny, and I'll tell you why, for the reasons that Frank mentioned there. It was so ticky-tacky, boring passing, and I know it wasn't all his fault, because he's just there, but he's had a few days now. He's looked at the video of that game. He's looked at the personnel. So all these things are going to be interesting. You know, does he go with a similar team? Does he make personnel changes? Can they be more incisive? Because if he has another 90 minutes like that, and there's every chance it could happen, because Burnley have certainly got themselves together with, you know, good results at Anfield, the good result against Villa. They're finding their feet in terms of their shape. So it's going to be another big question about breaking a team that sits deep down. And I don't think anybody could suffer another 90 minutes like what we saw from Chelsea against Wolves. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's going to be able to come up with something that's certainly different and better than what we saw last week.
Craig, was there ever a time when you or a teammate didn't play for the manager like some Chelsea players
Frank
apparently did to Lampard?
Frank...
When? And who with?
No.
You must have seen it quite a lot, Craig.
when they didn't play for the manager. I know players that... This is a difficult one because, and I'm sure it's happened, but I know, and myself included, I've had periods where I've not got on with certain managers and I've seen players that have been left out for weeks and weeks and then they've came back into the team, but they've all come back in with personal. I think I've answered this kind of question before. When you're a professional, there is a professional pride. So if you're going out on a field to intentionally try and play badly, I rarely, if ever, can remember that happening as a mindset. I mean, I know players that have taken the field, myself included, and I despise the manager at that time.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I'm going to go out and try and play badly because there's 50,000 here. You know, it's like, they're going to get on my back. So I don't know if Frank's ever came across this, but I don't, off the top of my head, remember somebody intentionally doing it.
Frank? Yeah, it happened to me once in France when we had a French Cup tie and the dressing room was really divided in two. And the coach didn't survive to it. I was his captain. I was really fond of him. And he was a fantastic coach. But the thing is, he put on the bench some people who had a certain age and thought they deserved to be on the field, where the coach decided to put some young players like Olivier Dacour, for example, who play for Everton, Martin Jetou, who play for Monaco as well. Fantastic young players, and those players didn't like it. And I remember that cup tie where three or four of them, you know, didn't play the game and were doing everything on purpose. And I took the young guys and I said, okay, we'll have to work the double to make sure we're going to go through. We went through. But the coach didn't survive because it was so much a divided dressing room, so it was impossible to end up the pressure for the coach.
Wow.
So, Dan, one thing I would say is, and I can tell you this, that did and does probably still go on, that I know a lot of players at various clubs who, you know, could have played, right, on a weekend or a match day and were injured, but could have played, but chose not to go through. It's not the pain barrier, but chose not to just go that extra mile when they could have done, because quite frankly they didn't really respect the manager, or the manager hadn't been playing them. And so that I presume that still goes on, but that would be an easier way to put it. That, you know, I know guys that just go, I'm not, you know, I've got a, you know, if you say, oh, I've got my hamstrings still tight,
right.
What you, or my back sore, unless, you know, unless you've got a cruciate or a broken leg or something obvious, it's down to the player and the professionalism. So that would go on a lot. I saw that at Derby actually, and it wasn't so much because nobody respected Jim Smith, because everybody to a man almost respected Jim Smith, but I saw it at Derby when we were in the height of a relegation battle and there was some who didn't want the pressure. And that's a different scenario where, you know, when we, in my first season there, finally got to safety, I think it was the second last game of the season against Newcastle at home, the treatment room doors burst open. And it was like, there was a flooding of people just come out and went, I'm fit, because we're safe. And so you do find scenarios like that.
Good stuff, guys. Thank you very much, Craig and Frank. And we'll be back tomorrow for more. Be sure to join us then. Goodbye.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.